Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is episode 258. No, 59. Because it's a bonus. Because it's the. Anyway, this is episode 259 of the Trash and Pieces podcast, and I'm joined today by Winston Duke. Man, this was a great one to get. I got to go and see Us as a preview screening. Us is the new film from Jordan Peele, who's the writer and director of Get Out, and it's fantastic. And Winston is one of the leads in that. He was also in Black Panther. He's the other kind of king that challenges, the king that lives up in like the mountains and then comes down and helps save a Wakanda and all that. So, we had a really good chat. I had a limited amount of time, but I really wanted to get this one in, and I knew I could put it out as a bonus if it's a bit short. He's just a great talker, and it was so great. Again, I've said before, I get more from this as an actor than anyone else gets as listeners. But it was great to talk to an actor who is so thought out in his approach to everything. So there was literally just tons here I could learn. Obviously, there's also loads of really good stories and outlooks on the approach and working with Jordan Peele. I'm going to stop rambling on. You can head over to patreon.com/scroobiouspip if you want in on that. I mentioned in this podcast, I mentioned the episode with Patrice Couleurs of Black Lives Matter. If you enjoyed that, if you're intrigued by that, go and have a listen. I think I mentioned the Spike Lee episode. I'm not sure if we mentioned that before we were rolling. We definitely mentioned, sorry to bother you, so you can go and check out the Boots Riley episode. I think I mentioned the Killer Mike episode at one point. Again, I can't remember because I set up while Winston was in the room. So the Killer Mike episode was dope. So yeah, there's some good episodes to go and catch up on if you enjoyed this. But for now, this is episode 259 of the Distraction Pieces podcast, and I am joined by Winston Duke. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. As we ease into lunch break, how's it going, man? I'm joined today by Winston Duke. How's it all going?
Wonderful, wonderful. Thanks for asking.
Are you enjoying the trip to the UK so far?
Yes, yes, yes. My first time in England, in London, and you know it's wonderful. Everyone's really lovely and receptive, and everyone's loved the movie. And
yeah,
it's really great.
Yeah. How do you find these press runs and things like that? Because it's often a weird thing that you're quite detached from the project by this point, right? Because you filmed it and then it's in the hands of editors and the director to kind of put things together. And then you have to come back and go, oh, yeah, I remember that film. I remember how that was.
Well, it honestly feels brand new in the sense of we've been watching it. Often with an audience for the first time, which changes the movie completely. Watching it with the audience at South by Southwest was kind of like the final character in the movie finally showing up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Particularly with a horror, right?
Yes.
It's one of the, I'm a big fan of cinema visits in general, but I like being in the cinema on my own as quiet as possible. But horrors... And maybe I take my god kids to a few kids films, and kids films are ones that it adds to if there's an audience.
Yes.
But horrors are maybe a big comedy.
Yeah.
It adds to that excitement because of the reactions, right?
Because it's so communal. So it's like being on a roller coaster, and you're like, oh my god, we're going up, going up. I've never done a roller coaster alone.
Yeah,
I feel like that would also change the experience.
Yeah.
Of what's happening. So being in there and everyone else screaming or laughing, it changes the entire thing. And South by Southwest was just one of those artist communities, one of those, they question everything that they see.
Yeah.
They laugh hard, they love hard, they all these different things. So it was really just amazing to go through it with that. And then they cued us into a lot of nuances that when we were watching by ourselves, we just didn't see.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, comedy is so cultural. Comedy is so much a thing that it all depends on, like, who's watching or listening and their point of view. That they're going to be like, oh, yeah, that glance was really funny.
Yeah.
That, you know, that inflection was really funny. So some things that happened and that they laughed at, we just never saw it. But then now we're seeing it all the time, you know. I love it.
Did you have any of that in your own performance that you, on the day you were playing it one way and then with a crowd they reacted in a different way and you get to be kind of, oh, yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah, yeah, I played that for laughs. That was intentional.
I think some of Gabe's lines, I think the slapping, and I hope that this is coming out after
the
movie.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, so the slapping of the engine.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was that funny.
Yeah.
After he's like, I know what to do. They told me how to fix this.
Yeah.
And he just starts slapping the engine.
Yeah.
I didn't think that would be funny.
Yeah.
And it was funny. But then when my doppelganger is hitting the engine as well.
Yeah.
They went crazy. Because, again, that's the way he knows how to fix things.
Yeah.
So I didn't think that would be funny at all. And in both sides, it was really good.
Yeah. There's been, and we'll get into this more later because we've got a decent amount of time to talk about things, but it's a really exciting time for black cinema and black characters in cinema. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons for that is the mistake when white people were writing black roles was, we've given you this strong, powerful character. The real inclusion and equality is to have flawed characters, varied characters, interesting characters. So this must have been a dream of a role because you've got, again, I don't want to give tons of spoilers, but in the trailer it's clear that it's about, there's some doppelgangers in there. You've got your main character who's a flawed dad, who's everything embarrassing about your dad, but then everything great about a dad at the same time. And then you've got a whole completely different character to play as well. So how was that to kind of, to read it and then to get to go and jump into it as a role?
It was almost like being able to do two movies together. And that's made it both challenging at times, but the best opportunity.
Mm.
So challenging was doing two movies during the time span of one.
Yeah.
So knowing that you had to flush out both characters equally, and at least that was my challenge for myself. I said I have to have two different perspectives and clear point of views that really clearly detailed the world.
Yeah.
That I had to do this for myself. That was the challenge, and doing it within the time span. And then the opportunity was really almost saying that in a different inflection, which is the opportunities I get to really flush this out and create two different point of views, you know, for characters. And have them be influenced by their surroundings. So that was really the big thing. And saying that I see Gabe as a husband.
Yeah.
And I see Abraham as a partner.
Yeah.
Not judging either character and going into them totally empathetically. And not saying, you know, Abraham's a villain because I think Abraham is shaped by his surroundings.
Yeah.
And how he's connected to Gabe is that they're essentially the same person, but defined by their proximity to privilege and comfort.
Yeah.
So Gabe gets to have healthcare, something super basic.
Yeah.
He gets to have healthcare and have access to healthcare and have glasses so he can see. Meanwhile, Abraham doesn't.
Yeah.
Abraham can't see very well and has to become a lot more tactile and touch his surroundings and be so much more deliberate because he has to, and it's a means of survival.
Yeah.
Gabe can spray it on the walls and see what sticks, you know, as his personality.
Yeah, yeah.
He possesses all things. He possesses the home. He possesses the trophy wife. He possesses the trophy family. Meanwhile, Abraham has to be a partner and sees salvation in his partner.
Yeah.
So he's an ally. He has to be an ally because that's the only way for things to get done. Yeah, so really defining these men by their world and then having them have clear point of views on how they also interact with that world was really important.
Yeah. Removing the kind of societal constructs of good or evil, did you have a character that you preferred between, like, no, finding as yourself?
I thought they were like my kids. I thought they were like my babies, so I couldn't choose. I thought Gabe, I got to lean into my spontaneity so much.
Yeah.
I got to play with just like spontaneous decisions and actions and be very reactive.
Yeah.
Like Gabe was reacting to a lot of what was coming at him.
Of course.
Meanwhile, Abraham, I got to just like really try to impact the world and be totally just very thoughtful about every single thing I did, because he had to. If he grabbed something, he was not going to let go. It's very powerful, but finding his power and finding very small moments, you know, seeing for the first time was very big for that character.
Yeah.
You know, so really being dropped in every situation, but having them be defined by different things was really, really necessary.
Yeah. How was it taking your first kind of step into horror? Because it is its own beast, and
mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a balance, and we'll get on to talking about Jordan a bit later. But there's a balance in good horror to have that, to have humor in there, to have lightness in there, so the impact of the horror is greater, I guess.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So how was that to step into? And preparation wise, was there a different approach to go, right, we're doing a horror now, here's how I need to approach this this role?
There wasn't a different approach to it being a horror. I think it was a different approach to me going into what I felt was Jordan Peele's world, which was a world of layers and a world of allegory and metaphors. So really figuring out what those were like and doing research on the imagery and what that meant and what that could mean and how I could play within that and be bold within it was helpful and necessary. But how the work is similar is I still need to be a dad. I still need to create attachments. I still need to know why I love my wife.
Yeah.
I still need to know what frustrates me about the relationship. I still need to know my point of view. Do I have a favorite child?
Yeah.
So those basics are, no matter what genre, they're going to be there.
Yeah.
So like the relationships have to be clear and defined. And at the end of the day, the only thing that changes is the conflict.
Yeah.
The conflict's going to be different. What they have to get through and how they respond to conflict is really going to be what makes it a genre piece for the actor.
Yeah.
So really knowing that I could still simplify my work so that the big things can be imposed upon it.
Like
the big story pieces can be imposed on it. So really being clear with what I want my relationships to be helped.
Yeah.
So I didn't think, oh man, I got to prepare for a horror film differently. What I did want was to figure out how the genre functioned.
Yeah.
So Jordan gave us a bunch of movies to watch, and the movie that I attached myself to really immediately was The Shining, because it showed how a family dynamic could function within the horror genre, and how a monster that felt incredibly familiar yet foreign at the same time could be depicted.
Yeah.
And that monster was the father.
Yeah.
And I said, oh man, this is really good stuff. This is good stuff for me to like take into this movie and play around with. How the home could be functional.
Yeah.
So that one was like, that one was my secret way in. I was like, oh man, this is the thing.
Yeah.
I can play with this one. So it wasn't something where I had to try to do anything in particular just for the genre, but understanding the genre and the conventions used in it was really important for me.
Yeah. The Shining feels like a great one to take influence from for Lupita's character and for you to be looking at Lupita's character, because in The Shining, you know, the home is kind of the monster, a building. And for her character, at least in the first half, that location, that town, that area is the thing that we don't know why she has a fear of it, and she doesn't really know why she has a fear of it. So it's a really good one to find that intangible before it becomes a physical threat, I guess. Oh,
completely. And the home in our movie as well,
yeah,
for me, served as this great metaphor for how perilous these structures that we cling to can be. Like this house that's beautiful, well, the glass and the windows, but it actually doesn't protect them whatsoever. No. You know, and it's like our comfort is just comfort, but it doesn't actually protect us. It doesn't serve us in any other way other than an aesthetic.
Yeah.
You know, and that for me was something that was really important to like take notice of and live within. And if my character Gabe was a man who was defined by his possessions, how vulnerable is he really?
Yeah.
So really understanding that and having myself be an expression of that was very important for me.
Yeah. Did you have to kind of balance your urges as an artist and an actor and the character? Because, again, you touched upon the fact that Jordan will have layer upon layer and so much stuff in there. But Gabe wouldn't be aware of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. He's not that kind of guy. So did you have to kind of restrict how much you read into everything? Because the reality is the people that you're playing aren't going to have knowledge of that. So it's a balance, right?
Well, I never play anyone who's not as smart as I am.
Yeah.
So every character I play, I think it's really important for every character to be as smart as you are.
Yeah.
But they might not have the means of expression.
Yeah, sure.
So with Gabe, I think Gabe, for me, sees the world through the lens of a patriarchal culture.
Yeah.
So he's the head of the family. When he speaks, he must be heard. You know, I sit at the head, I drive the car, and all those things translate into like how he traverses the world. But then his definition of self and performance of self and how I performed him isn't your classical male in cinema.
No,
he's not. Yeah, he's not your stoic leader. He's not your stoic Western cowboy that acts more than he speaks. He speaks way more than he acts.
Yeah.
He is overly articulate. He shows you everything that's going on the inside. He's able to be goofy and strong at the same time. He's able to be sexual and also a bit unattractive at times.
Sure.
All in the same being. And that to me was like his expression of self, and how I played him was one that wasn't, you know, what he professes that he is. And that to me represented the duality. That to me was the opportunity to show duality in this character.
Yeah.
And I leaned into that. Like I leaned into being able to do that. It was a pleasure to be able to do something like that, you know, and also do something that people don't really expect of my traditional build and appearance, right? You don't really look at the 6'5" broad shoulder guy as the comedian.
Yeah.
You know, you look at him as the action person. You look at him as the guy who's going to solve the problem. You look at him as the leader. And I think we break those norms. We break those tropes. And play with those in a really interesting, cool way.
Yeah, I thought he, as a character, he brought great reality to the kind of surreal world that Jordan tends to thrust us into. Again, it's not giving much of a spoiler, but his initial reaction to the threat was so real. Because all of us think, in that situation, we're going to stand up and we're going to get the job done. He kind of tries that and fails. We always talk of fight or flight, but there's actually fight, flight, or freeze. And there's a level of freezing in what he does. In his mind, he wants to be, I'm here to fight. Mm-hmm. And then there's a, it's not working. They're not being scared off. And I thought that was a beautiful way of, and again, something rarely seen in TV. In TV, it is always, as you said, the hero stands up and has their moment. Whereas this was, that's what he wanted to do. He wanted to be a hero in a film. And he couldn't quite do it instantly. In the end, there's ups and downs of every character.
He realizes that the things that he attached himself to and that he clings to don't really serve him. Like the patriarchy doesn't serve him because it doesn't lend itself to a means of actual survival. Like, yeah. Allyship lends itself to actual survival.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, if you just take it on yourself to have all the answers, but you're not in the position of, you know, what's needed for this situation, then you can't be the leader there.
Yeah.
You know, you have to rely on others and others' strengths as well to complement your own.
Yeah.
So he has to learn that. He has to, you know, see through the veil in a deep way. Yeah. Privilege doesn't help you, you know. I think that's the power of these genres too, is that it allows us to say, really, you know, these isms don't function for us in extremis.
Yeah.
Like, if the zombie apocalypse happens, like, does it matter that your help comes from a black guy? Does it matter if it comes from a gay man or gay woman? Does it matter if, you know, who helps save your life?
Yeah.
Like, you can't be racist in the zombie apocalypse.
Yeah.
You know, it's these isms don't really serve us. So he has to learn that that doesn't serve him. It doesn't, you know, like, being attached to the car doesn't serve him.
Yeah.
Being attached to the home and so on doesn't serve him.
Yeah.
All these things that he's attached to doesn't actually serve him, you know. So it's really, it says a lot about who we are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I mean, we've touched upon it being a Jordan Peele project rather than necessarily a horror or anything like that. And he does seem to have just come straight out the gate and established himself as this creator. The way I think about it, before I became an actor and a podcaster, I made my name in rap. And when I was starting off in rap, I was all about, the key is content. Content's the most important thing. Forget about all these new fancy flows or techniques. Content comes first.
Mm-hmm.
And that was ignorant, because down the line, I then realised that people like Big Daddy Kane, KRS-One, Kendrick, all of these were going, no, you can have all of it. You can have content and the flows and the smoothness and the delivery. And Jordan feels like he's come straight out and done that in his films. So you can have a message but still be entertaining. You can have, you can make a stand, but it doesn't have to feel like you're at a lecture or doing homework. And you can be scary, but you can still have humour. So it kind of, how was it working with someone who seems to be throwing the rule book out, or more just throwing the restrictions out? Because I think a lot of what he works, a lot of the way he works is in strict confines of rules of how genres work, how films should work. Yet he seems to not care about the restrictions, and it seems to work.
I think it's really just, I think what's really great about what he does is redefining a lot of things and redefining the genre through redefinition of language.
Yeah.
And once you do that, that feels like breaking the mold, and that feels like breaking the structures, but it's evolution. You know, once we could self-define, I think it gives us a lot of agency.
Yeah.
I think he helps to redefine things like violence. What does violence really look like? Is it violent that these people are being stabbed, or is it violence that these people have no control over their destiny?
Is
it, you know, is it violent that, I think the character's name is Chris in Get Out? Is it violent that Chris, you know, impales someone with the horns of an antler, or is it violent that they're trying to steal his mind?
Yeah.
They might not be killing him, but they're trying to gentrify his body. They're trying to take his soul out and put their soul in. Like, that's really violent, you know?
Of course,
so it's like a lot of redefinition. And I think when you approach redefinition, that bleeds into whatever genre you're in.
Yeah.
And that kind of helps to create your own space. So I think he's doing is helping to do what a lot of other people are doing right now, is curating conversation.
Yeah.
And once you can curate conversation, you could do it within the confines of your genre, or you could break the rules within that genre, because the intention isn't about changing the genre. The intention, I think, is about curating conversation.
Yeah.
So how do I most effectively curate conversation? How do I curate conversation about the complexity of, you know, black psychology?
Yeah.
So I'm not trying to change genre. Yeah. I'm trying to cultivate black psychology and how it's depicted in you know, inside our genre and inside our industry. Yeah. So you see people breaking tons of norms and establishing new rules when talking about black psychology, like Sorry to Bother You and Boots Riley.
Yeah.
Right? Where that's all just like shifting convention, breaking the constantly, fourth wall and fifth wall. Like just like breaking all these things. But really, I think the intention is let's shift the conversation.
Yeah.
Instead of let's shift. Because if you just do it to do it, then things can be, feel trite. And,
completely.
And yeah, things feel as if you're just, you want to be important for the sake of being important.
I couldn't agree more. I think it's what comes along in Jordan's work is that he's learnt the rules and he's choosing to subvert them rather than just, oh, I don't really know, I'm just going to do what I want because I'm a renegade.
Focus on the intention rather than, you know, focus on the intention rather than the impact.
Yeah.
Is really what he's doing. And it's, for me, that's how I frame it. That's how I frame the thought.
Did you feel there was a removal of pressure in some part in it being, in a Jordan Peele project, being a Jordan Peele project? The way I was thinking of it on the way here is, I don't know if you're a football or soccer fan at all. This is a really odd reference, but there was a few years back in the UK when Chelsea were winning all the league and cup. They had a manager called Jose Mourinho, and people would get annoyed that it felt like Jose was making it all about him, and it wasn't about the team, it was about him. But what that actually did was give the players room do what they do without the pressure, without as much pressure, without... So the fact that people are now waiting on a new Jordan Peele project means that you guys, same as in Get Out, could come out and shine without it feeling like the pressure is on you. Did that feel that it was the case at all, or did you feel the pressure of being in essentially a follow-up to Get Out, the next project after Get Out?
It is a great question. I didn't feel a lot of that pressure. I think it's... There's a lot of self-imposed pressure, and yes, that's being his sophomore film, but in a lot of ways, this being my sophomore film.
Yeah.
You know, this is my follow-up to Black Panther.
Yeah.
And, you know, trying to do something that's totally different than how people saw me before. But I was very pressure-averse and tried to steer away from it because I felt that pressure could be detrimental to the creative process for me.
Yeah.
Like, and how much I'm ready and willing to risk. And I don't like working in that kind of space. I like being able to not be governed by people's ideas of how I should do a thing or how it would look. Yeah. And, you know, sometimes it's harder done than said. But I stayed as far away from pressure and like far away from any ideas of how this guy should be played and these men should and could be played, because I wanted to feel as free to create. I feel in regards to the aspect of the question of it feeling like there's a lot of pressure taken off me, I don't feel like any of us really walked in every day with a chip on our shoulder. I think if there was pressure, I didn't really see it because Jordan came every day just listening.
Yeah.
And it always felt like the script was in process, just like we were. So anytime we had a thing where we'd say, this doesn't make sense, or can we do something different? He'd say, yeah, I'm going to go through that on the next pass.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, we're doing that scene like a week and a half from now, and I just did a pass on that. What do you think? And we'd talk, and he'd be like, okay, I'm going to go home and look at that again. So we'd say that on a Friday, and a Monday would be a totally different scene, or little things would change. And it really made you feel like things were evolving. So you never really came in thinking of pressure. It was just, it was changing like you changed.
Yeah.
Or we'd see something totally different on the take and we're shooting a lot of things in order. And we'd be like, I didn't think of that just from off the page. Just from being in that moment and seeing it totally different.
Yeah.
I think that actually leads into this moment, don't you think? And we'd have conversations like that often.
I love that. It feels like a real indie film of vibes. So how did that differ from Black Panther? Because Black Panther was, man, if we're going to talk of films having an impact, mm-hmm. I had Patrice Cullors on the podcast who's mm-hmm. was talking about founding Black Lives Matter, and she brought up the importance of Black Panther and of Wakanda and giving this fictional country to get behind and to unite behind without any conflicts. And so how was that to work on, and how was that, I guess, after it came out? Because that's got to have been where it all started to get really real, you know, mm-hmm. when it came out and it was suddenly this huge thing.
Yeah, man. Where these two movies are similar, it's about rich world building.
Yeah.
So working on them, it's really about laying deep foundations and what the worlds are and kind of building the structures and living in them.
Yeah.
So it takes a lot of work and it takes a lot of energy. The reception so far feel quite similar, actually. Yeah. When Black Panther came out, we saw like fan art and all this stuff like crazy. It was just like watershed moment.
Yeah.
And then so far with us, we dropped the trailer on Christmas.
Yeah.
And right away, fan art nuts, people attaching them, because again, it's offering people a different way to view themselves. And you brought this up earlier, saying, you know, it's given people a way of not seeing themselves as perfect or completely imperfect.
Yeah,
it's somewhere in the middle.
Yeah,
and I think we all kind of feel that, and that's the universal truth. Yeah. You know, no matter your background, is that you're in process.
Yeah,
and it shows people in process. Right, and that's the power. You know what I mean? That the Black Panther showed a culture in process.
Yeah,
Black Panther showed a culture that's trying to move forward and figure themselves out. You know, I'm a new king, and I have to figure out how to govern. Yeah. I just lost my dad, and I'm trying to move forward. I don't have a home, and I'm trying to move forward. Yeah. Where's my home? So it was all about process. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And our movie as well is about process, and it's those kind of universal truths. And I think that's what's really getting people feeling like they're included. And it's about Black psychology, which is what we don't see in film very often. Yeah. We don't see films that say, you're complex. You are not one thing at any time. You're not a monolith. You're not good just because we see you in a moment of goodness. You're not bad just because we see you in a moment of terrible things. You're somewhere again within the gray.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that's what's powerful. What's happening behind the eyes.
Yeah.
And it allows people to see those things. And what comes out of those two worlds is it's really special to be a part of, you know? And Black Panther allowed people to reclaim a past that they always knew they had represented in a fictional present.
Yeah, yeah.
That feels familiar and completely distant at the same time.
Yeah.
Right? And that's just something special. That's just a big thing to be a part of. And I always say that, you know, we walked into that movie as actors and walked out ambassadors.
Completely.
For Wakanda.
Yeah.
And with this movie, I don't, you know, we haven't yet felt the impact.
Yeah.
We're getting ready to see what that's going to be. But, you know, it's really great to be able to show something and do something that has impact on people's lives. And that's the power of representation, is you're not always able to tell what that impact's going to be. So it's really good to focus on the intention. But representation does so much for all of us. It does so much for us as adults. It does so much for us in our infancy, you know, because it helps us form who we are in a really holistic sense.
Yeah.
So Black Panther and us, it's just really powerful. And seeing, you know, that kind of representation of diversity and strong, diverse black psychology in other movies like Moonlight.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's really powerful. And it just allows you to just be so much more.
Yeah, completely. It felt like with, again, on Black Panther as well. I mean, Us is very much an ensemble piece, but Black Panther felt exciting because it ended up coming out kind of feeling like an ensemble piece, and that hadn't been the way in superheroes.
Really big ensemble.
That hadn't been the way in superheroes in the past. Generally, the primarily white superhero and their opponent or enemy were the two focuses of the films, and everyone else was kind of would pad things out. Whereas Black Panther, it felt like so many surprise breakout characters. Everyone was excited to see who Black Panther was and what it was going to be. But it was your character and so many other characters that brought it to life with such depth and variation.
Yeah, I feel like everyone actually went in there and this led with their best foot forward as well. So everyone took the opportunity to just flex and blow the world out, you know? So it ended up being memorable for all these characters and all these actors, which was powerful. And it left me just feeling like there's room for all of us, because in that scarcity model that a lot of dominant cultures in the world as we know it right now exist in, it says that there's only room for one. There's only room for one black male lead. There's only room for one black female or one female lead altogether.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's only room for one Asian guy. There's one room for one Indian woman, you know? And in a movie like Black Panther, it's told me and taught me there's room for us all.
Yeah.
And that you can see the nuance in all of us. Like, you could put Michael B. Jordan and Chadwick Boseman in the same movie and have nuance.
Yeah.
You could go as far as to put Chadwick Boseman, Michael B. Jordan, Daniel Kaluuya, and Winston Duke. And have totally different characters and all worthy, powerful performances. You completely. Can put Danai Gurira and Lupita Nyong'o, who are two dark-skinned women who would usually be at odds for the same role. And see them as completely different people.
Yeah.
You know, so it really left me going, wow, there's room. And there's room for all of us. So we don't need to be in competition. And that felt really good. And that I carry that into all the other jobs that I do as well. And how I traverse through this industry.
Yeah. Well, was acting always the kind of the goal when you were growing up? You were born in Tobago, right? Mm-hmm. And then came to the America. Was acting on the cards, or was it something that you had to kind of fight to get a foothold in? Because again, not all of these big changes are in the recent years, it feels like. So it does feel that you will have been preparing yourself for an evolution you didn't know was coming. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a beautiful thing in that way.
Mm-hmm. Completely. So that preparation feels, in retrospect, something I've been doing forever. And like I've been being prepared by life forever, but during the time it wasn't something that felt deliberate, you know? It just felt like working hard and being good to myself so that I'm able to sleep at night, you know?
Yeah.
I never robbed anyone, I never hurt anyone, I never did anything that I feel bad about, so I could sleep easy, you know? So that's a big part, but you know, it wasn't always deliberate, which means it wasn't always easy.
Yeah,
you know, I couldn't say I'm going to do this, and these two things are going to add up.
Yeah,
I mean, my history of being from Tobago started preparing me to be a storyteller from when my sister used to read The Jungle Book to me from like some of her first books that she brought home from the library, the local library. To the old man that used to spend his afternoons at our restaurant and tell me all these old folklore stories, you know, or just interacting with a culture of just big personalities that everything became a story, you know. So I was just being prepared just subliminally my whole life. And then being from the position of an outsider, right, because I came to the United States as an immigrant and had to acclimate to a totally different culture and had to read about the culture to get into it and and find ways into it through, like, comic books and books and TV and, you know, art. That I was looking at it from an outsider, which means I was, like, fighting for what is the story. What's the story of this world so I can interact with it? So, like, the world was preparing me. I just had no idea. You know?
I love that.
And really just appreciating that and leaning into it has been really helpful.
That's perfect. I'm going to wrap things up now and let you get off to lunch. But before we do, I just want to kind of ask, it's always a tough question with actors because there's so much you can't talk about, but what's ahead? Obviously, I'm going to swerve Endgame completely because I don't want you getting in any trouble.
They'll come for you.
Let's just not talk about that in any way. But yeah,
they've got mics in the room.
what is ahead? I know you've shot a film with Mark Wahlberg, who I'm a big fan of. There's talk of a Kimbo Slice film. I was reading. I'm a big MMA fan. I was meant to have Kimbo on the podcast just before he passed away, sadly.
Oh,
but
wow,
that's an exciting project. So what?
So, you know, again, can't talk very much, but it's everything that I'm a part of, I'm glad to say, is a conversation piece to me. And I want to always be in conversation with my culture in some way. Either larger cultures that we participate in or smaller subcultures that are, you know, that exist. I want to be in conversation. And that's how my work, I want to interact with people. I want them to question themselves and question their surroundings and just ask and speak and converse. So everything I'm doing kind of falls within that vein as of right now. And I'm really excited for that. I'm producing some of my own things as well. So it's a good time. Lots of work. But it's a good place to be.
It's exciting. Thank you very much for your time, and I'll let you go off and have some lunch and have a brief break before getting straight back on it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Discretion Piece.
There we go. I hope you enjoyed that. A little short one. What an amazing talker, right? I loved that. I loved him, his explanations, and how thought out he was with his explanations. Great dude. I'm excited for all that is ahead for this guy. He seems to have a real good head on his shoulders and a real good outlook on everything. So yeah. Exciting. I loved having that conversation. And there you go, a little bonus one. Under an hour. We've bought it in under an hour. I even kept the intros and outros short. As we're on the outro, I'll mention We Are Lizards, my club night. I'll be DJing in a rubber lizard mask. We are back at the book club on March 30th. Come down and get involved. The book club, March 30th, 3 before 9pm, 5 or after. Door price increases as the night goes on. If you want to be on the queue jump list, email your names to info@thetrashsociety.com. And patreon.com/ScroobiusPip if you want to support the podcast and have all the extra bonus behind the scene content and information. But I'm not going to hard sell anything here. SpeechDevelopmentRecords.com is my record label. Blah, 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 blah. Hope you enjoyed this one. I really enjoyed having the time to talk to Winston. I enjoyed putting together my questions because watching us made me have a lot of unusual and interesting thoughts and ways of shaping the questions and putting these things. So it's always a buzz for someone as a podcaster. And again, as I was saying at the start, as an actor as well, because you're engaging with another, you know, someone who you hope to be your peer down the line. It's great when you have your guests say, that's a really good question, or I've not been asked that before, particularly on press junkets, because they're getting asked a lot of questions over and over again. So yeah, it was a cool one to do. I hope you enjoyed it. I'll be back next week. But until then, this has been Distraction Pieces Podcast, episode 259. Ta-ta.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.